Accession number 17747, Real 5.
I think you were telling me about your second Waltzby at Chester.
Yes. I had been to Waltzby in February 1942 and went again in August. As usual, these things took place at fairly short notice. I see from my diary that Thursday the 13th of August I was told that I was to go with two friends to Chester on the day after tomorrow. So managed to get off a cross-country run and started thinking hard about tackling this second Waltzby appearance. The next day the three of us wangled ourselves new battle dresses from the quartermaster, new boots and caps. Why we wanted new boots, I can't imagine. But then, this was the occasion, I see, on which we had a preliminary session with the RSM, who asked the three of us going for our commissions whether we would be able to kill Germans with knives, pocket knives. And we found this slightly bizarre. We went for a walk on Pendle Hill. And the next day, Saturday, we had to wait ages, as one did in those days, for passes from the office to get on the train. And we had a snack at the Free Canteen on Preston Station. This was a wonderful service run by the WVS or similar bodies. We were put onto the wrong train, and we were taken to Crewe, from where we went back to Chester. And eventually we found somewhere to sleep in the transit camp. We walked all round the old city walls, and we ended up in the same hut that I had been in. Is that okay for recording? That I had been in February. The next morning, Sunday, we were treated very civilly, and we had a drink in the Blossoms in Chester with the Brigadier. And then 60 of us went to Satan Camp with all of our kit. We had 4 hours of intelligence testing, very intensive paperwork, but we noted the superb living conditions compared with what we were accustomed to in our mill in Clitheroe. I was particularly struck by the difference between February and August in terms of the way the army had developed its testing. What had been a very odd sort of pre-war social test in February was now a properly organised series of paper tests and all well organised in the kind of way which we later grew used to after the war for recruitment to the civil service and so on. It was systematized.
Could I ask you a bit more about those tests? You said it was systematic. You mentioned IQ tests. Presumably these were problem solving.
They'd be problem solving, and also problem solving in the verbal sense, but also the diagrammatic reasoning, I don't know what one calls it, but fitting things together. And some of it would be multiple choice, I'm sure, in response to the written questions.
Were there any psychometric tests?
You mean being interviewed by people?
Or by multiple choice answers to questions about ethical and moral questions, for example, or attitudes?
I wish I could remember, but I can't. I think it was more to do with straight intellectual response, problem solving, rather than attitudinal.
So they weren't really testing temperament and outlook and basic psychology.
I think they must have been, because 4 hours of papers can't have been all intelligence tests, and I would think that some of them were sort of responses to theoretical exercises, how one would react to this or that. Though it is, this is over 50 years ago, and I can't remember.
It sounds rather more like military knowledge if you were giving your response to a given set of circumstances.
Yes, or coupled with reasoning power, with general intelligence, as opposed to very specific military knowledge, perhaps.
Did you have a chance to get an impression of the other men on this Wasbay, what they were like? Did they have anything in common?
Well, I'm not sure. What I can't remember, and I ought to be able to, was whether we had group tests in the sense that I faced in the civil service after the war, where you would have, say, 10 people or fewer grouped round discussing something so that the observers could see who was shaping best under the groups in the group situation. I can't remember whether we had that. We may have done, but the only people I can remember at all were the two who went with me from my own unit. And I can't remember much about them.
You just kept too busy to really mix with the others and get to...
This was a fairly intensive weekend, and I think that when we were not doing written work, we were being peeled off one after another for interview with different people. But it's too long ago, I simply can't remember the detail, and I don't want to invent it. Anyway... I see that we did all of this on a Sunday, so the Sabbath had ceased to matter very much in these circles. We were interviewed on the following day, Monday. I note that I was interviewed by one, a visiting board, and two, by the president of the selection organization. I didn't feel too happy about my interview with the visiting board, but then Colonel Barnes, the president, seemed to be very friendly and says that he will certainly see that I get to Octu, which I found encouraging. In the afternoon, I see that we did exercise situations in the fields, and that means literally in the fields, which were very tiring. No doubt these would be of the kind which in which you have to get a log over a river without getting wet or some similar nonsense, which calls for group activity rather than single-handed activity.
So these were practical tasks?
Yes, these were practical tasks.
Do you remember if in these tasks one of you was appointed as leader of the group for a particular task?
I'm quite sure this happened, yes, in succession, so that we would all have a leadership role. Otherwise, it would have been a bit invidious.
So you were given something to do?
Yes.
You
had to take charge of an operation, a minor operation, of getting something from A to B under certain conditions. But I can remember no more about it than that. Also, I see, and this is an attitudinal question of some interest, which I met later after the war, but I see that we had to fill in forms about within the group who would be one's best friend and who would be one's worst enemy, which I think has become well-trodden ground since the war, but was really rather innovative at that time. Apart from anything else, it meant snitching and so on, which was not conceivable, but perhaps in the regular old regular army tradition. I mean, the influences that had been brought to bear since February, which is only 5 months before, I don't know what they were, but there was a sea change in the way the commissioning was handled. And it went on. Tuesday the 18th of August, I see that we had to spend the morning doing 3 essays. And then a number of people had to see a psychiatrist. I was not, in fact, required to see the psychiatrist. And the afternoon of the Tuesday, we had PT, in which we were observed. It was not too testing.
Did you remember what the essays were about?
No, I had no recollection at all. None.
Well, all the PT tests, what do you have to do?
I don't think they were tests. Well, I suppose they must have been tests. One thing which I remember, I think, on this occasion, was the test of balance, being able to walk along a beam. I think they didn't want people who were going to fall off too easily. Although I don't think this was necessarily a disqualification. I think it was a test of... not of skill at physical exercises, but of a general willingness to tackle things which might be slightly hazardous, like jumping over ropes or beams or walking along things. It was slightly a test of nerve rather than physical strength, I would have guessed.
Nowadays, at the regular commissions board, every candidate has to go round an assault course.
Mm-hmm.
And in the assault course, one of the tests is they have to dive through a wooden framework in the shape of a square and land in a sandpit beyond it. Do you remember if that was
this? I'm pretty sure this was not part of this was only testing to see whether one could go to Octu. We did have that kind of thing, not precisely that, but that kind of nerve test at Octu itself, but not, I think, at this stage. Now, in the evening, I noticed that, and I don't know quite what I meant by it, the note I put, we air our grievances about our base camps to captains who are partly in charge of the course. I think this was probably just a way of getting us to open up and talk less formally than we had during the tests of the day. I noted they seemed to be a very decent crowd. I wish I could remember more about what these captains were doing, except socialising with us. And this went on, it continued, I'm surprised to see, until the Wednesday the 19th, having gone on since Sunday. Wednesday the 19th, the final inspection. And I can't remember whether this was inspecting us individually, presumably as a group. But then we appeared individually before the complete board. And I suppose this was a sort of tidying up interview for them to clarify anything they had missed about us and for us to doing the decent thing by us by letting us ask questions which we may not have had a chance to ask during the previous 3 days. And that was it. I've noted that we then had lunch and went back, in my case, to via Preston to camp. Now, shall we pause there for a moment in case you want to ask anything about that?
When were you informed of the result? Were you informed?
Ah, well, we can come to that. I note in my diaries that back Thursday the 20th, back to the same old grind, can't get any news of the WASBI results, War Office Selection Board results. One was very impatient at that age. It had only finished the previous morning. And I spent the whole day with a lieutenant and a major on various artillery theoretical exercises, which I found boring. Went to the cinema in the evening. Friday the 21st, still no results, though I went to ask the adjutant. And then I was put on to a Sunday scheme and duty tonight. And so I had to prepare for Saturday. Then Saturday, Lieutenant Kosher gave us the results of the WASBI. I got a B, Tom got a C, and Mac failed. This, knowing the calibre of Tom and Mac, forgetting about myself, this seems to show that the tests were quite tough. And that was that.
What did those letters mean?
Well, A was A, B, C, and I think there was a D, which was also still a pass. What did they mean? Well, we took it to mean, in crude military terms, the equivalent of what they would have meant in A levels or high school certificate as it then was, or in A being much lesser equivalent of a first class degree, B a second, C a third, and so on. I think I knew one chap, and only one, who got an A, and he was a very nice lad from who had been to Marlborough and had been in the cadet corps at Marlborough throughout the sixth form, and who knew the military thing inside out, as well as having all the obvious command and leadership attributes which his parents had paid for. And he got an A. He was a splendid chap. But B was regarded as quite good, and I was not displeased by this.
Looking back on it, do you think that the assessment was objective or subjective?
When you're trying to find out who might be able to lead men in action, I'm not sure where the difference lies between objective and subjective. I don't know quite. I don't quite understand the question from that point of view, because I see an intermingling of an objective assessment of somebody's capabilities and also a subjective hunch as to whether they're going to panic or command respect or not.
So basically, it's both.
I think so. Yes. I think it's different in that sense from. Perhaps I'm being unfair, different from judging whether somebody will make a reasonable accountant.
Accountants don't generally encounter the sort of violence that officers do.
Precisely. Or indeed the particular variety of some unpredictable stresses, I wouldn't have thought. But then these days with the creative accountancy, who knows?
I don't think we'd better explore that too
far.
No. Let lead us off into byways.
Yes.
So you've done the WASB, and you'd been told you'd passed it, and
I went to see the RSM the next day to try to get some leave after all these trials and tribulations, and then an unusual thing. I went with a troop of guns to a public park in Accrington in the afternoon on Sunday, and I was the sole gun position officer assistant there as a lance bombardier, and I was on show with guns answering questions from the public, and it made a change from being in barracks, because little boys and attractive young ladies used to come and would come up and want to look at the guns and have things explained. And it was a PR job, which I enjoyed. I was also given some Home Guard beer, which I enjoyed.
I mean, did the public show an intelligent interest in the guns?
A difficult one. I think that this is a Sunday afternoon in the park in an area where everybody was working jolly hard during the week in the factories, making this and that, largely for the troops. And I think it was part of the exercise would be to try to show the public the end product of what they were working at in their working lives, the end product being the firing of guns. This was August 1942. This was two or three months before El Alamein. We were still very much up against it. We were still... Well, not quite on our own, because the Germans, Russians and Americans were now in the war, but the times were hard, and I think it was important to show Mr. and Mrs. Public something of the fighting end of what they were working at, the civilian end of.
It wasn't for recruiting then?
No, it was not for recruiting, because we, conscription was in full force anyway.
So really it was a matter of encouraging the war effort?
Yes, that's right. Yes, I mean, it was music while you work by a different route, yes.
When did you hear that you were going to a pre-op chair?
I shall have to think around that. I mean, I think we knew that it was the general drill that one would go to a pre-op to. May I just pause for a moment? We left that at about the 20th or something of August, and I did, in fact, get a week's leave, thanks to the RSM, and I came back from leave on the 4th of September, and had a medical exam. I don't quite know whether this was connected with having been accepted for OCTU. It probably was. Things were plainly beginning to wind down as far as my current posting was concerned. I did a lot of letter writing, packing up, and then on Monday the 7th of September, after hints and rumours, Tom and I, who'd got through this WASB, were told officially of our posting, and we threw a tea, cinema and drinking party with three or four other people. We were relieved to know something definite. Tuesday the 8th of September, prepared more fully, another medical inspection. We drew a rifle from stores. We lunched with the at a women's organised club in Blackburn, wrote home, and made our last farewells to people for Wednesday the 9th of September, when we were off early, leaving Worley behind for good. Reached London 1:45 after a good journey, dumped kit, walked Whitehall, tea at the Strand Corner House, Lyons, caught the 4:18 train from Victoria, had to wait ages for transport to the pre-OCTU camp at Rutham, that's Wrotham, Rutham in Kent. Eventually settled down in a Nissen hut in darkness and had to fill in some kind of questionnaire whose content I can't remember.
Had you been told anything about what you were doing?
No, I mean, we had a general idea that it was indeed pre-OCTU, in other words, getting us in trim for the course at OCTU, and it made sense, I suppose, to see that people who were going to the OCTU proper would not waste OCTU's time by being at different levels of achievement. So the object of the pre-OCTU was to get people up to broadly the same starting line for OCTU itself. But this left, of course, unresolved the question of how long you'd have to spend there, because of the need to get you up to that standard. Indeed, there was always the possibility of being sent back to one's unit for being not up to standard.
Was this pre-OCTU specifically artillery?
This was an artillery. It was a field artillery OCTU. And it was on... the physical setting was in woods, almost at the top of a hill at Rutham in Kent. I remember it being up a long track, which with prolonged rain was extremely muddy, as was the entire site. It was a dismal place, although it must have been lovely on a fine summer's day. The first thing which we found to distinguish us from people who were not the potential elite of being officers was that on the next morning, the very first morning in daylight there, we were given white cadet flashes to wear on our shoulders and in our hats. I can't remember exactly what they were like, but they were distinguishing white marks to show a cadet status. Then we had a series of tests. I note that we had the first thing we had was a director test. This was a gun orientation test. And in the afternoon we had tests of driving both lorries and motorbikes. I got through these things, and I met a friend who'd shared a hut with me in Worley, and who'd gone off to this place a fortnight or 3 weeks, or perhaps even a month before I did. And we had a grand reunion, walking together and talking about what had happened. The next day, 11th of September, we did map reading in a hot sun in the fields, had to watch some training films, and we also had a pay parade. We got some money, and we heard an amusing lecture on the Indian Army by a brigadier, and joined a long queue for the NAFI, and then blankered our kit for tomorrow. And tomorrow, that's Saturday the 12th, we were inspected by, I've noted, by a lame major. Whether he was a war wounded, put on training duties, I don't know. Then we had lectures by a major and a colonel, and we walked to the nearest station, which was 2 or 3 miles away, a place called Snodland, from where we took trains to Maidstone and had a bit of time off, having tea, shops, dinner in a hotel, and ended up at a dance hall, I see. Train back to Snodland, and then a 4 mile uphill walk to the camp, having failed to get any fish and chips. We got in at midnight. Sunday, 13th September, we were issued with a variety of books. Now, I don't know what they were, but I gather, I would think they must have been technical gunnery books.
What's the training at this technical aspect of gunnery, or was it on being an officer as well, leadership?
Well, it was in the officer context, in the sense that high standards were expected, and we were chased around. That I remember very clearly. It was a place of being chased. But as to the training itself, it was it was specialised. There was you had to get through various disciplines during your time there, and if you didn't get through them in a first, I think they were in fortnights. If you didn't get through in a fortnight, then you had to stay another fortnight doing that thing, unless you proved yourself incompetent, in which case people actually were sent back to their units, either for good or for further basic training before they could come again to the pre-octo. And indeed, scanning as I speak through my diary, I see that on Thursday the 17th, I found that I am to be here for 4 weeks out of the full pre-octu period of 8 weeks for those who were new to the army. Now, those who were new to the army in this case meant, as I recall, largely people who had, in fact, got through to their certificate B in in the cadets at university.
University or school?
The STC. Well, they wouldn't get to certificate B, I don't think, at school. They'd get A. At university, you'd get B if you'd already taken A at the sort of school some of these people went to. Otherwise, in my case, I had taken A at university. I could have taken B had I stayed on to take my degree. I'd have got certificate B as well, and then I would have gone straight to this pre-octu instead of having had a year in the ranks at the ordinary training regiment.
Having had that year of ordinary training, presumably you were more familiar with the basics of gun drill and gunnery than
That's right. I mean, this was a year which in some ways had been wasted, because I could actually have taken my degree during it, but had chosen not to. On the other hand, it did make life a good deal easier at this phase we're now discussing, because I was fairly confident about the things I was doing, and apart from brushing up this or that, I was not in the business of having to really suffer learning these things for the first time.
What about the business of having to maintain a high level of turnout and being chased about? I mean, presumably that was nothing new to you.
It was nothing new, but it was just more so. Training. I mean, when you are viewed as a potential officer, various things come into play. One is that you must be at least up to the standard of the men you're going to be in charge of. And secondly, I say this with a smile, really, it would be forgivable if the NCOs felt a slight hint of sadism about those who were going to be ordering them about in a few months' time, and every opportunity was taken to order us about, not unfairly, but with some severity.
Was there a strict disciplinary regime at the pre-option? Did you have a regime of restriction of privileges or other?
I didn't suffer it, but I know that this could happen, as indeed it did at Octu itself, where I had my only army punishment, which we may come to later. It was a very minor infringement. But yes, there was discipline.
There is a
But I mean the main discipline, of course, was the overriding one of being sent back.
RTU'd,
yes.
There is a school of thought in most military training establishments which says that everyone in them, particularly those who are going to become officers, should be punished at least once during their training so they know what it's like when they hand it out later on.
I think that's... I've never heard that before, but I think it's a very good point. But, I mean, you might equally say, of course, I suppose in action everybody should be wounded at least once. But no, I take your point.
And certainly, sometimes one hears NCOs saying, you're on report, and on being asked why, replying, because it's your turn.